I was empty, like gone. You know, there was nothing left to give anymore. And the only thing I could do, or the only voice I could listen to, was that said, go home. Some people that I thought would have supported me were the ones who said, we actually don't think you're going to make it out of this without him. Oh man, opening up myself to love came at the right time. And it just was effortless.
Hi, Genies. Welcome back to Access Genie, the podcast that opens doors to success in the world of entrepreneurship. Here, we tell extraordinary stories behind individuals that will inspire you. So if you are passionate about personal growth, inspiring journeys, and actionable insights that can help you take your business to the next level, this episode is for you. Please join our podcast if you haven't subscribed yet. What are you waiting for? Welcome back to Access Genie, the podcast that opens doors to success in the world of entrepreneurship. If you're looking to grow your business or even just to start it and scale it, this episode is for you. Today on Access Genie, we have a story that will touch your heart and inspire your soul. My sister, Kaise Nqula, a beloved television presenter and actor, and now a media entrepreneur, is here to share her incredible journey of healing and resilience. You'll be able to know about how she was able to take herself out of the rut to becoming an entrepreneur and a strong single mom that she is today. This conversation will inspire you. Let's get into it. Thank you so much for being here, Gay.
Thank you for having me, Ancila. Wow. Listen, that was quite the introduction.
And I didn't feel like it was even befitting enough, because you have come from so far.
Mm.
And I feel like just using titles of what you do is not enough.
Oh.
For the kind of woman that you are.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of people know you from Our Perfect Wedding or watching you on television, acting. And some people might know you from the tragic story of your husband's loss,
yeah,
and how you are able to grow from that.
Yeah.
But I know that right now you are happier.
Yeah.
You're standing tall.
Yeah.
And you're in love.
And I'm not a very tall girl.
Yeah. And you're dating. And I'm so curious, how has been opening yourself up to date again after suffering loss been like for you?
Well, thank you again, Ancila. I think, you know, being here is a very special moment for me. And I don't know if I'll really be able to answer your questions as coherently, because it's quite an emotional journey that you were part of. And maybe we'll be able to delve into that as we continue to conversate. But how have I been able to open up to love? I've been able to open up to love. To myself. When you go through a life-altering incident or a life-altering, you know, circumstance or change, you know, it brings you towards yourself. And you would know that the loss of my husband was really probably the most, you know, sort of exaggerated part of it. And of course, because it's loss and it was a loss of a life so tragically and cut so short, and, you know, because, you know, it was so wildly known. But I think what often is sometimes overlooked is the loss of how I almost also lost my life. And, you know, the loss of, you know, my physical abilities during that time. And I think that's where it started. It started when I had to recognize just how much that grief affected Kaise, you know, all that she was, all that she dreamt that she was going to be. And then, you know, tying that up with having to also now grieve the loss of a spouse during that. I think it was double, triple, like it was insane, you know. But, oh man, opening up myself to love came at the right time. And it just was effortless, you know. I think I was waiting on it, but not necessarily like looking for it. It just landed in front of me. And maybe I don't want to tell the story of how we met, but like, you know, because I'd want him to be here to witness that. But it was just there. It was just there in front of me. He was, you know, just God placed him, and it was a thing. It was like a moment. I looked up at him, and he looked at me, and I think that's when we knew that, okay, this is it. You just get the feeling, you know. We have that thing called the gut, and it tells you, it never lies, you know. It tells you intricately that this is where you should go.
Yeah. And you guys are incredibly gorgeous together, and I think is a fitting part of your life, the way in which he just looks at you and, you know, treats you, which is really remarkable. You know, they say dating today is like the pits. Mm-hmm. I've heard the stories. I haven't dated in over a decade.
Yeah, but lucky you, girl.
Lucky me. I hear it's rough on the streets. Everybody's like, listen, be happy that you're not in the dating pool right now. Were you scared of that? And did you witness it in any way at any point before Mr. Right came along?
You know, love is so multi-layered, you know, because like I'm saying, it had to start with me, and I had to accept who I now was, physically, emotionally, you know, mentally. Would I now be coming into a new relationship as a new person? You know, my expectations were totally different. Yes, I know what love was, and I truly believe that I was gifted with the best of love. But do I think, you know, dating is the pits? Look, I think it's a personal journey, because for me, it was the pits because I was the pits, if that makes any sense. You know, if you're not, you know, ready, and I mean truly ready, you're not going to attract anything that's going to be any better, you know. And I know that a lot of people, and I think I'll speak for women, are saying, no, but I'm good, you know, like I've got the career, you know, I'm a good person, and you know, I'm well put together. But sometimes it's not that you're not a good person as well. It's also just the timing, you know, time and space, the person that we need to stop looking at love as an exterior thing. It's so spiritual, you know. Love is spiritual, and sometimes when we settle within ourselves, we can really attract that which comes from God, you know, for us. So for me, yeah, it was like I said, it was by chance. I think I was vibrating right, you know, to attract love. And yeah, it happened when I least expected it, but I was happy to accept it and receive it because I had done the work within myself.
Yeah. You say that you don't think maybe dating pool is the pits, but you were attracting the wrong things, and because you were the pits. Can you clarify a little bit further about that and your experience with that early on?
So, you know, I think the hardest part for me was accepting, like I said, that I now had changed completely, and perhaps trauma had, you know, presented a different person to what I thought I was deserving at the time. What I mean by that is that, you know, you can really be not a nice person sometimes when you're going through trauma. You can also not say the greatest things about yourself when you're going through trauma. You can not think the best of yourself when you're going through trauma and grief. And I think when somebody else looks outward in and they're able to capitalize on those vulnerabilities, you're not going to attract that which is the best for you. And it just felt like, because I mean, for the first 2-3 years, I wasn't dating at all because I was really, really so distraught by how do I commit my life to somebody and within 10 months, he's gone. So how do I even begin to, you know, look at love the same way? How do I begin to trust love for me? So I truly believe that I was not attracting the things that I wanted, although I knew that I would eventually get them, but the timing was not right. And I needed to dig a little deeper, you know, a little deeper, because if I've done it before and I've been able to be loved and love again, why wouldn't I be able to do it again?
Yeah.
But it was about finding myself within that space again.
Talking about finding yourself within that space again, I know when we first met, I think it was 2019 when we first met. I think we met during a very difficult time. I remember coming to see you in hospital and you were in the hardest part of your journey at that moment in time. And I think what a lot of people don't know is just how dark it got. Extremely. They see you and they even saw you during that time looking so strong and working and standing for Zuko and not understanding just how dark and tough it got. Mm. Could you perhaps highlight those darkest of times during that journey so that somebody who might be going through something right now realizes that it wasn't as easy as you made it seem?
I'm getting a little emotional because I remember that day. And, you know, God, it was hard. It was hard because, and you know, my tears now are so different because I'm just like, wow. How did we move past that darkness? You know, you came, thank you so much. You came to my hospital room and I think we had met a few months prior to that through work. And when you walked in, because I had now been in hospital a second time after the funeral. And I think in the second, you know, batch of my hospital stay, after, you know, undergoing more operations and more, you know, physical analysis with all these clinicians that were working with me, the one thing I was stuck on was, my God, like, I'm in hospital now and I'm safely secured away from the world, if that makes any sense. Because here, I can really be vulnerable. I'm injured. I'm really at the mercy of the people taking care of me and I'm at the mercy of my family. But what's going to happen when I need to get out of here? Because at some point, I am going to need to face the world. And with the work that I do, that means the whole world. And I was just stuck on, like, where, how, where do I start? What do I say? Damn, I can't even walk, you know? So you walked in with your husband. And, of course, you know, there were the pleasantries, but you were there so utterly distraught for me. And I could see it in your eyes. But God said to me, but here's your aid to achieving, you know, as your name says. Before you left, I had to say to you, Ancilla, you are the only person who's going to help me through this. I don't know where I'm going to start. I don't even know who I'm going to talk to. You need to help me get up from this bed and in a way that is going to carry it with the dignity and the sensitivity that it deserves. And then you said, but like I run a PR company. And I said, yes, that's what I need. I need you to come and craft this image of this person that has been, you know, her life has been utterly destroyed. At such a pivotal time, you know, literally at the pinnacle of my career and my life, because I had just gotten married, I just had a baby, what everybody dreams of, you know, starting a family. So I didn't see anybody else who could move me past. So it was that dark that I didn't know that how I was going to craft anything outside of that hospital room. And you were just the appointed person that God said, she's the one, ask her. And when you said, but I've never managed a celebrity personal brand, I said, well, you're going to learn. And I think I gave you a bit of a challenge there, and maybe you can share that. I know it's not my interview, but you know, I think if I had not challenged you to do that, you would also not know just how great of a story you could build out of what happened to me.
For sure. I'm now getting emotional. I'm trying to control myself because I also remember that day vividly. You know, you're wearing this gray dress and they even walked down the hallway, you know, trying to walk. You couldn't, and you know, couldn't even get any further. And even post hospital, I think that's where the journey even began even more, because you had to go back home.
Ooh, girl. Like I said, I was terrified of leaving that hospital. Terrified. Because the world was awaiting. It was awaiting to hear, see, imagine. Like, something that catastrophic happens to you and everybody wants to know. And I mean, with good reason, some maybe not so much, because I guess, you know, we need to know when something bad happens to the next person. But some were genuinely, and I think most actually, genuinely concerned. But I didn't know how to face that. Even the ones that were caring, I still felt extremely, you know, scared and terrified and unsafe. And so I just threw myself into your world.
And I thank God for that. And I think that's like such a big lesson for all of us to just ask for help. Even if you don't know if the person is capable of helping you. I didn't even know I was capable of helping you. Neither did I know how I'll do it. Even now, I don't know how we did it. It can only be God.
Absolutely.
And the strength that you have. I remember the first photo shoot that we did at Fairlawn's. Shout out to Fairlawn's, Shame. They supported us.
Thank you, Fairlawn's.
So
thank you. We remember.
They were at a time where I was so aware that you were going through so much. Mm. I didn't have a lot to offer than to just go and fight for you.
Mm.
And I think what gave me the strength to do that was seeing the strength in you. Mm-hmm. You were fighting every day, guys. So even when you say, Ansel, I threw myself in your hands because I didn't know what to do. Listen, you were there. Mm-hmm. Maybe you might not remember because you were going through so much.
Mm-hmm.
We're at Fairlawn's and I'm saying, guys, you need to go work because what is your son going to eat? His rent is due. Need a manepi. You carry your whole family, not just you and your son.
Mm.
You have an entire family of people that rely on you.
Absolutely.
And I know you're grieving, but girl.
You remember I said to you, hey, Ansela, hey, Nkalile. Yes, Nkale, ngaza ngabona ukuthi actually maybe sekuzophuma igazi manje, you know. And then I said, but ngizokhala kuze kube nini, because a lot more is going to go bad. A lot more is going to go wrong if I continue to wallow in this grief. But even with saying that, I think it was also coming from understanding that I did allow myself to grieve, and which is an important part of the process. Because if you don't allow yourself to sit in that pain and to face it and to really, really allow it to make you sick to the pit of your stomach, if it has to, there's no way out of it. You know, sometimes you have to go and dig out the dirt and squeeze it out until it is clear, and then only healing can take place. And that's what we did. You know, that shoot at Fairlawn's, I remember how I couldn't even stand. I mean, I had not worn a heel in over a year, and I still had to try and walk or stand or pose. My hand was still like wobbling down. You know, I couldn't even pose. We had to position it, and then we'd like run to the camera. Did we get that shot? And I laugh now. I look at God and I'm like, wow.
Yeah. And I think it's a testament of what we always said. We'll be like, Sissy, it's hard right now. One day we're going to sit and cry tears of joy. And I feel like we're sitting on that one day right now, because I'm like, I haven't thought about those periods in such a long time that now I'm like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
You know, this has been able to manifest itself from all of that had happened. And how was the state financially? Because Farai was holding you down. That was he was a man.
Yes, he was a man, you
and
know.
Now he was gone.
And I love that you say he was a man, you know, because every household would take on, you know, or rather every man in a household will take on the role of being a leader, a provider, a guide, you know. And my husband was all that and more. And I say more because his role didn't just end at those masculinity or, you know, gender sort of stereotyped roles. He was all-encompassing. If I'm out shooting for hours on end, honey, he's out there doing the groceries, cooking the supper, making sure the kids are fed and they put to bed. If there's something to be fixed in the house, he's fixing it. Like, I had never met such a well-rounded human being and so self-sufficient. And so as a partner, I was truly supported, you know. Ours was a partnership of immense proportions, you know, because we really, really could show up for one another in not even just our weakest parts, but just in just being there for one another. We're a team, you know. And so when he's gone, it takes away the financial aspect, but it takes away life. Because, I mean, who's going to help, you know, this train continue? Like, who's going to steer the ship to continue along? Who's going to make sure Zuko is, you know, fed and bathed and, you know, without, of course, blessedly, my mom and my helper were there. But it's different, you know, because when you're building a family with somebody, it's that person's responsibility. With everybody else, it kind of feels like, look, they're doing it because they kind of have to. And I don't diminish the importance of that. But the importance of having done it with your partner in life is something that, you know, it can't be compared. So it took away everything from me. And because I couldn't even work, and I work in an industry before my entrepreneurship journey where I'm a freelancer, and I was taken off actually a production when the accident happened. I think I'd shot like a week, and the accident happened on a Saturday morning, and immediately I was cast off because the production and the show must go on. The show must go on. And I was out for almost a year recuperating, learning how to walk, learning how to, you know, basically do my life again, bath myself, feed myself, drive. And there was no time. There was no time. You know, yeah, it took away everything. Financially, you would know that it really challenged me. And I think also just realizing how some people that I thought would have supported me were the ones who said, we actually don't think you're going to make it out of this without him. Yeah. I don't know if maybe that was the push. Maybe. I don't know.
And I think I fear the entertainment industry, as you know, because I think it's very
volatile
and fickle sometimes, especially in terms of relationships. And you would stand there with hundreds of thousands of people who follow you, you know, so many industry friends, etc. Maybe if you can share a little bit about what this part of your journey and grief taught you about friendships and people, because I think you've got a whole new perspective on that.
Absolutely. I think by nature, we are communal beings. That's what God has deposited in us, that you are born out of a person. And, you know, this person becomes your mother who then takes care of you. And then she has a community of people that help her do that. And then, you know, we carry on this trend that, you know, to be a person, you need other people, which is absolutely true. Umdungu, umdunga bantu. But when you're going through something like that, you know, I think that human thing, you know, because you grow and then some kind of go away. And then when something happens, whether it's in the good or bad times, people will come back and be drawn to that because it's a humanly instinct. It's something that we have within us. But the journey of walking back to restoration or elevation is something that you can only do by yourself. Unfortunately, you know, they can be there cheering you on as much as they can, pushing you on as much as they can, giving you, and it's all important, yes, because without them, I don't think you would even have the guts to think that you can do it, you know. But ultimately, it's like a baby having to walk, you know. You let the baby crawl and then they hold on to things and they fall. And each time they fall, you want to pick them up, and that's the help, right? But it's never going to take away the fact that they need to learn to do it on their own. And that's what the journey was for me, that they were all there surrounding me, but within reason and within the good time that they need. And then they slowly started to fizzle away. And it hurts at first because you're just like, but so-and-so said they'd be here. So-and-so said they would be here. you know, then the calls started getting fewer and fewer, you know. And it started getting very quiet, very quiet. And it was just me and God. And God and I had to make a pact about, okay, girl, now that I have your attention, where were we? Yeah. So it's taught me a lot about the power that I have within myself to stand. It's taught me a lot about the power of isolation for elevation, you know, because sometimes that time away to be mindful and to be present, you know, is everything that you need in order to take the next step.
That's so powerful. And talking about isolation, I remember we had been working together for maybe a little over a year or something. And then there was a moment where you left and went to the Eastern Cape. And then I remember when you came back, we're having this conversation and I'm like, Sissy, I felt like you distant to yourself. Like, what happened? Because you and I were just like this, you know, throughout the journey. And I'm like, what happened? Because I was feeling some type of way. I'm like, Kaisa is removing herself. I hope she's okay. I've got worry and all of this. And then you said something so impactful to me. You said, you know, I realized that I needed to figure out how I can rise on my own without you.
The very same guys who said she threw herself onto you. Because now, you know, but now I was like letting go.
Yeah. And I that was painful, right? That so much. So I appreciated that so much because I look at you now.
Mm-hmm.
What did that isolation in Eastern Cape, you spent months in Eastern Cape where people didn't even know, they would have thought that you've fallen off the earth, but I know that you hadn't, you were building. Mm-hmm. What did that time in isolation back home do for you?
It felt like a rebirth. And I think we always think of a rebirth at the end of like, you know, ooh, the baby's out, we all rejoice. But the pain and the grits and the intensity of having to be conceived, to be nurtured within the womb and, you know, go through those growth spurts. Because growth, for anything to sprout out, it takes effort. You know, it's hard. It's not easy. You know, we always learn about it in biology class or, you know, science tells us, you know, that this is how we're conceived. But the process, you know, or the mutation, I don't know if I'm using the right words, but it's not easy. So it means now I had to go back to where I was from, where it all began. Because all of this happened and there was so much noise. I was in the midst of it. I'm in Johannesburg. Like you're saying, Kaisa, you have to work. You have to eat. No time. Let's get you back. All within good reason. But man, I was empty. Like gone. You know, there was nothing left to give anymore. And the only thing I could do or the only voice I could listen to was that said, go home. And I've never done that. You know, I'm from the Eastern Cape, but I've grown up in Gauteng. I think I moved here when I was 10. So I regard this as home. You know, this is what I know to be home. But to now go back and do lalini with my grandmother and, you know, go back to my grandfather's homestead, which is on my paternal side, my father's side, and just listen to the cows and listen to the birds and look at the sea and be one with nature and not have to be anybody's anything. I didn't have to be Zuko's mom because I had to also give him, you know, away for a bit. And that was hard because being a mother changes you. You now stop living for yourself and you start living for the child. But when you realize that you can't actually give the child anything anymore, what is the point? So I just had to let him go for a bit, you know, temporarily. And I still am going to talk about that, you know, as I continue to also, you know, unpack this journey. But that was one of the things that I had to do. Let go of my child, let go of self, and also just, you know, everybody else that I had been there for, as much as they had been there for me, yes, of course, like you say, I take care of a lot of people, and they would know that I've got them, you know, no matter what challenge they were in, whether it's, you know, them living with me, you know, I'm providing this, like we're there as a family. But now I had to say, guys, I'm down. So let's figure it out for ourselves. And that was hard because I'm genuinely a people's person. I'm a family person. I want to be there and, you know, be a place of solace. So it really just stripped me really of everything I once knew, everything I thought I once wanted to be. And I had to go back and start. Guys, you know, what did she want? You know, does she still want the same things? And if she doesn't, what does she want now? And how does she intend to have them? And I think the one thing that I wanted the most was me. I wanted myself. Yeah, I wanted myself again.
Sure. How did you discover that you were empty and unhappy to an extent of making that kind of decision? Because I know, you know, even the Bible tells us, God says, come to me bare and naked and as you are, and I'll show you the way. Take me back to that moment of realizing, listen, guys, you're unhappy and you're empty.
I think it started off with our business relationship ending. And then it was quiet. Because the first thing that would make you think that you're not worthy is if you're stripped of your livelihood, right? If you're stripped of your work or your money or anything, you know, that gives you the ability to earn a living, you then think, but okay, then kukondunga. And then I had to realize, but there is more to me. More to me is kaise, without the flashing lights, without the photo shoots, without the campaigns, without the PR, you know. And then I was like, but okay, God, but then what are we going to eat? And he said, but don't worry about tomorrow because it will take care of itself. And then I said, but how? And he said, trust me. Trust me. I said, what? He said, yeah, pack your things and go. Take what you can. And I left what I could in Johannesburg, you know, locked it up safely and took what I could in my little car and my baby. I took my son. And I know that, you know, a lot of people think like that was even the brave thing to drive, you know, such a long distance after having been in a road accident myself. But I was so brave. There was this courageous spirit in me that said, I'm going to reach the destination because where I'm going is exactly where I need to be. So I need to trust that I'm going to, you know, this journey is going to lead me there. And I left. And when I looked back at everything that I was leaving and where I was going, that's when I realized, no man, I'm gonna be fuller where I'm going, because there is sort of a settling in my spirit that this is who I am. I don't have to show up as, like, I don't have to try. I don't have to, I can just be. And then from being, I can become, you know? And that's when I think, you know, the light bulb moment came that you're empty. You're empty because all these things you're chasing, they are never yours until you are who you should be within yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Until you're full within yourself. So, and in the midst of all of this happening, Farai passed away in Zogoa's 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're trying to heal, find yourself again and figure all of this out. And you discover Zogo is autistic.
Mm. Oh, girl. Yeah, that was another part of the emptiness, because I was just like, I'm trying to be a good mom. I'm trying. And then this child turns out to be neurodivergent and autistic and on the ASD, terms I had never even heard before, you know. And that discovery came, you know, shortly after his first birthday that you were also there at, before his second birthday. And I started to just notice that my child was very different, you know. And the first indication was just the delayed speech, you know, and the lack of, you know, attention and, you know, response to instructions, you know. And I alerted my mom that, because she was co-parenting with me and living with me, and I said, but I'm not sure, but something's different about Zuko, you know, something's very different. And when I look at kids that are sort of the same age as him and that were born, you know, around about the time that he was, amongst my peers, are way more developed. And of course, every child is different. That's the first knowing that every parent should have, is that your child will be different. But there are fundamental things that I felt within my gut know that, no, he's a very different child. And so we began, you know, a journey of, you know, assessments, going from one specialist to another, going from therapies, and then eventually 6 months later, we got a diagnosis that he's autistic. Whew, man, it started all over again. And oh, I think that's when, look, it's not when I decided, but it certainly was part and parcel, because I didn't even know how to now show up for this child. And then how do I tell other people? And it was just like, yo, girl, you got problems. You know, I started to feel like I was going to be that girl whose life was just, you know, not meant for anybody to applaud, you know. But as I journeyed, you know, and when I left and I gave away my child for a little bit to, you know, be taken care of by somebody else so that I could really understand what was my role in his life, I began to understand that I had been given the ultimate gift, Ancilla. Like, greatness is not, it's not a switch. It's not like, you're great there, you know. Greatness comes in these moments of realization that, but nothing about me is like anybody else, you know. Why would I then raise a child who is like anybody else, you know? I truly believe that my child is a superhuman being. If you look at autism, it's all about heightened sensory stimulation and regulation. It means that everything that is normal to us, he sees it, feels it 10 times more. Is that not like something that is godly? I think it's incredible. You know, is it difficult? Absolutely. Is it unusual? Definitely unusual, because we don't know what it is to live in your own world and to feel everything more than the average human being. But it is my duty as his mother to make sure that the world, it's not even an inclusive thing. I use that word and I use it loosely, but the world belongs to him just as much as it does for you and I. And my duty is to make sure that this world is a place that he can live comfortably in who he is and not anybody else. And so that's when my journey of healing with, you know, finding, you know, myself, raising a child that was different, and the grief of who I thought he would be. And now, girl, I just look at him in amazement. I'm just like, what is going through your mind? You know, it fascinates me. And to think that he stands a better chance of probably creating some of the world's best inventions or some of the world's best, greatest, you know, unseen things. Like, I'm besides myself at the possibilities, because it means that he has no limit. He has no limit. And some of the limits that we place on ourselves are because they were all born in here. They were all born in here, and then somebody, you know, repetitively told us that we couldn't. He is fearless, you know. And that means, obviously, we have to be his constant eyes and ears. And it's training. It's a lot. And hence, I've learned to take time out for myself and just go fill up and come back. But wow, I am excited for him.
Yeah. How did you know it was time to come out of isolation?
How did I know? When it started to feel like I had reached the ceiling there. Because once now the birth was ready to come out, I was a baby in a cocoon, remember? And, you know, the crafting had been happening and happening. And then I felt in my gut that it's time to give birth. And then I said, let's go. And I got back to Johannesburg as quickly and as silently as I had left. And I began to build this new being that I would now become.
Yeah. What are the kind of things that you had to unlearn and leave in the old, with the old guy, so for this new chapter of your life?
Oh, so many, sis. But I think one was that I needed everything else outside of me to make sure that I became who I wanted to become. It's all within me. It's all within me. And I need not to be afraid. I need not to be afraid. Yes, when something is manifested in the physical, you're going to need people to execute it, but it has to be born within myself. And I have to trust that this move I'm making is going to lead me to where I need to be. So that would probably be the first. The second would be that I needed to conquer the mountain that was me. Maybe that these two are the same, but just moving me out of the way, because I think we often are our own hindrance to our liberation and our own emancipation, because we don't want to trust that everything that's happened to us doesn't define who we are. We don't want to believe that. We don't want to believe that these things are occasions and that they can happen and, you know, we leave them behind. With understanding, of course, because they have a great impact on us. But now what do we do once we know that that impact is no longer there, you know, to continue us, or rather carry us into the next journey, you know? I think I also learned that I'm needed, I'm wanted. The world definitely needs what I have to offer, you know, and I have no business not doing it, because then I would have not fulfilled my purpose in this world. You know, hiding away is not going to help me do that. And so now I show up intentionally, I show up authentically with my good and my bad parts, but that's because that is who I am.
Yeah. And you know, when you talk about that, there's one thing I've always known about you, and I think I've said it so many times. I even read Matthew 5 for you, and I say, you are the salt of the earth and you're the light of the world. So you are not wrong when you say the world needs you.
Yes.
Because we need the salt, you know.
To preserve.
You know, salt, you put it on a wound, it heals it and it covers it. You put it on food, it gives it taste. You know, you put it on the ocean, you're able to have the experience and give it life and all of that. So it's important that you didn't quit.
Yeah.
That you kept on fighting no matter what. And you said earlier that when you were going back home, and I know that you've had a tumultuous relationship with your father, and coming from one girl with daddy issues, I know exactly how that can feel. Now, in hindsight, and after all of that introspection, where do you stand with that relationship and the pain that it caused you?
Ooh. I'm getting emotional because my relationship with my father shaped a lot. Or the lack of. But going back to finding who I am started with my name, Domkayise. It's not on the idea as Domkayise, but it's derived from that. And most people believe my name is Domkayise, but it's actually Kayise or Kababa, you know? And I often used to just, you know, in trying to protect my heart, I used to think, no, Ngokababa, as in God's. But my God on earth is my father. You know, he was mandated by God to conceive me and, you know, guide me and do what God would do if he were to be on earth himself. But my healing and the turnaround, I think, came for me when I understood that as much as I am a human being, so is he. He may be my father, and I may look at him with the lens of a father and expect godliness and righteousness, and, you know, but he's a human being. And he has much of a right to make his mistakes as much as I have, or as much as I do. And so mine was to go back and sit alongside him, taking away everything else that I was told, or everything else that I thought, you know, I'm picking up, you know, red flags, you know, in your parent. But just to just wallow in the presence of a father, you know, particularly in my life as a girl child, you know, because that is basically your first love, you know. And I looked at my father in the lens of a husband, you know, obviously to my stepmom now, but like, if he were to be my husband, you know, would I want such qualities? Because I never had that, you know, growing up. I couldn't, you know, pick out those qualities and characteristics and say, this is what I want. But for my, you know, I suppose luck, God gave me such a man, you know, because maybe he knew what I needed better than I did. But I stopped, you know, putting barriers and really looking at what we've been through and the journey. And I just wanted him to just see me at that stage where now I'm just his daughter. And I can say, Dada, dicela ugoduke uye ekhaya, dicela uye ngqoshwa, you know, where I'm from. And for him to open up and say, but here's your home, you know, inkaba yakho is here. Allow yourself to bring nomzukulwana wam and come and heal together was probably just, yeah, the turning point. Yeah.
Mm. And where does your relationship stand now?
It's okay. It's okay. I mean, we don't call each other every day, but it's nice to be able to say, hi, Dad. And then he says, hello, Machez, you know. And when he calls me Machez, it comes from within, you know. And I think also when I had introduced myself to the South African public as Umachezi, it was because I was acknowledging Aponsuka Kona. And when it comes from my father, it's even much more appreciated, you know. He's my dad, you know. And I love him dearly. I love him dearly. But I also understand that I'm my own person now. I'm a woman. So my needs are not necessarily, you know, going to be the same, but I definitely am healing those little girl parts little by little, and I'm taking my time with it, and it's just organic. Yeah.
One thing that I admire the most about you is your work ethic. You know how to work, girl.
Do I, girl?
Oh my goodness. And I always say that no matter how intelligent you are and how gifted you are, you never outshine somebody who knows how to show up and work. That's how I've got no doubt, and I've never had any doubt that you're going to win in life. And I know you even write things down. You know, I see your stuff and your books that you carry with and show me all those plans with drawings and future. And
I was looking at my diary just yesterday. I'm like, hey, I actually wrote it on my WhatsApp. I was like, I think my greatest superpower is writing down everything, because we forget ourselves and we forget our dreams. And how I wanted to build this media empire is all in those diaries.
It's all in those diaries. And I mean, we've had plenty of glasses of wine and stuff. I know sometimes you'll talk and I'll be like, okay, so see, I get you, but okay, let's come back now. Yeah. All right, so what are we doing now? Because you have such a futuristic person. And I think that's such a huge superpower that sets you apart from a lot of people, because that's being a visionary. You can stand and see and envision how the future could look like and know how to shape it, which is such a big skill and talent that a lot of people don't have. You'll find that the greatest inventions and the greatest entrepreneurs are the ones that are able to do that, because it's such a skill
and just stand against the grain. I mean, I don't know what your question would have been, but if I can come in, I think when I was growing up wanting to be in entertainment and media, it's in phases. I think I started off wanting to be the beautiful girl, you know, who could light up your TV screens and, you know, just bring my pizzazz and my bubbly nature and personality. But as I grew up and I started to understand the business of show business and how it works and how it intrigues me that, you know, commercially, this thing is like, it's a thing, you know, it's more than just about putting on the makeup and the glam. You know, there's actually an engine that drives this industry. I was never the same, you know, and you know, I'm obsessed with Oprah. You know, I'm obsessed with the Tyler Perrys. I'm obsessed with, you know, Issa Rae. And I'm mentioning international counterparts, but when it comes to locally, I'm obsessed with Basetsana Khumalo, you know, and I was so blessed to have her as my boss. I literally wrote about her when I was 16, that she would be my boss. And I thought I was going to present top billing at the time. What I didn't know is that I'd get to sit next to her and get counsel on how to be a media mogul, you know. So it feels like to me, I'm really living my dream, my entrepreneurial dream, because I've never wanted to be anything else. Absolutely nothing else.
Yeah.
I've been focused, very intentional, and I knew. And of course, all of these things happened, but they never took me off the ball. I knew I wanted to be the next media maven that South Africa has seen.
And I mean, you've been building that, because I think that journey even actionably started while you were grieving in 2020 with the birth of After Dark with Kaize.
Yes.
And I think that was such a beautiful project that showcased even a gap in the space, because I remember at the time we're trying to figure out how do you share your story and what you've been through. And then when we looked in the space, we're like, okay, so who do you go and talk to?
And we couldn't find
anybody who
could carry it with the sensitivity and the like intensity that we needed.
Yeah.
And we sat around that table and we said, but we have the story within ourselves.
Yeah.
So why are we looking outside?
Yeah.
And, oh, you know, what a journey. We caught everything we could in the air. If we knew somebody with a camera, we called them. If we knew somebody with a sound mic, we called them. If we knew somebody with a, I don't know, food, you know, catering company, we called them just to get this production going.
Yeah. And that's what starting a business is like, and bootstrapping. And I see that as the beginning of you building your empire. And I think it really talks about when you are building a business, you just start where you are.
Literally.
That's what happened with
After Dark. You just have to start.
Just start.
When we would talk about it, because we were business partners, and I must tell them this story, because you became my manager, of course, and my publicist, but we became business partners. And when we were trying to look at the financials, we're like, but what did we really do?
Yeah.
What did we spend? And we really couldn't put tooth and nail to it.
Yeah.
But we knew we had a product and it did incredibly well.
Yeah. I was just looking at it yesterday, seeing that even the first episode of After Dark is sitting at 1.8 million views,
man.
And people are still commenting. And I think it goes back to when you do work with the pure heart and with intention. And leaving your purpose, things work out.
Yeah.
Because that project was born not only out of the need to share your story, but the fact that we couldn't find a platform that we were comfortable enough with for you to go share that story. We then realized that there's many more stories that are being left untold because of that gap. And you carry conversations with such grace and sensitivity and empathy and sympathy, which is something I feel like we miss a lot in the industry. And that's what After Dark with Kaize has been able to do. And I'm so incredibly proud to have been a partner in that business, because it's impacted so many people. And I know that it's going to continue to do that. You're going to be filming more and posting more. And if you're not subscribed to After Dark with Kaize,
what are you waiting for?
And go and subscribe, because that channel does such incredible work. And I can't wait to see what you do with that. But fast forward from that project that was bootstrapping so hard after that isolation, I feel like you came back with more clarity on how this production and media entrepreneurship journey of yours will ensue. And building KNN Media, how did that journey now come about with that fresh mindset from that isolation?
So KNN Media was really born out of, like you say, me, because I've always been the media girl. It's what I was born to do. I didn't think about like, oh, okay, Konje, when I go to school, although my mom tried to redirect my path by making me study something else, but I kept telling her the same thing, girl, I'm an artist, I'm a creative, you know? And so when I had to come up with the name of my company, in fact, it was born out of my mom's company that was called Fikisa Gatya Communications. And she was doing PR and communications and catering and events during, you know, her time after leaving formal teaching. And so I thought, I'm going to rebrand this Fikisa Gatya Communications and make it a marketing agency, you know, all these things that are guys. And then it hit me when we were doing the production of After Dark. And I said, but it's KNN Media. It's Kayise Nolufefe Ngqula Media or the Kayise Ngqula Network, whatever way, you know. And so I named it KNN Media. And I didn't know what exactly in terms of our offering, our service offering, but I just knew I just wanted to tell stories, you know. And so I went to literally, you know, draft that. And when I was in the Eastern Cape, I came up with the plan that I needed this to be a multi-hyphenate multimedia production company. So we're going to tell stories with music, because I love music. And music has always been my first love. I thought actually I was going to be a singer. I don't know, maybe I might just still do it. Because remember, I'm now a new being. I can do everything that I was originally created to do. Music is definitely one thing, audio, sound, film and TV. Everybody knows me for that, so we're going to do that. Events, we're going to do in-person connections. That's important. And build those genuine, you know, connections and sincerity amongst our audiences, you know, that are our actually first-hand consumers. And then, you know, we'll see how it goes with, you know, things like publishing and audiovisual products, whether it's radio, I don't know. But like, I'm a media girl. Yeah. I'm a media girl and I love it. You know, I love it. It looks like, you know, now it's a startup because, you know, we're building ourselves. And I think we stopped having to look outward and we had to start with what we have. And After Dark with Kayise is really the first product that we're really going to fine tune until it's able to fly and get its own, you know, criminalization opportunities outside of just that property. Yeah.
Entrepreneurship is a whole new beast and a whole tough beast. What kind of challenges have you faced now as an entrepreneur? Because you're not just a face no more. You're a media entrepreneur.
I think funding has been one of them because this thing needs money. You know, I know it looks glamorous on your screen, but it takes, you know, some backing to do it. And I don't think it's because the money's not there, but it's because I'm such a visionary. It sits in my head and then I don't know how to take this thing out to other people and let them know that I need funding to do this. So I think it was definitely that time. Definitely, because you kind of spread yourself thin trying to do everything. And you taught me that lesson that don't work in the business, work on the business. And then you can sort of have more time to do other things because I still need to present. I still need to be a mom. I still need to be a daughter. You know, I still need to be a girlfriend.
Yes.
And I think, what other challenge? Yeah, man, I think it's just been, you know, being able to really, and you know, come up with a precise plan, you know, because I'm all over the place. One day I'm trying to do the record label, one day I'm trying, you know, so I needed to focus, you know, and I'm still struggling with that because, you know, I'm always at the end, like you always say, but I'm journeying, I'm really journeying. The struggles have not been something that makes me want to give up because the passion is as alive as it was from day one.
Yeah. And what do you hope KNN Media achieves in the long term? I ask this because, you know, I like to give unsolicited advice.
English is not our matter.
Listen. So I want us to sort of like now take this moment to structure this, because I know you're visionary and all of those dreams will come true, right?
Yeah.
So you...
But I need accountability partners in
of
you.
Of course. And we'll take this opportunity to do that. You've got all of these ideas. So what do you think is going to be achievable? We've got... It's day 200 today as we're filming this of 2024. So it means that we only have 164 days left in the year. What is it that you think can feasibly achieve
within the
next 164 days that will be the core focus of what you do?
I think After Dark with Gaius is really an enormous production in its nature in terms of its content offering. It may not do everything that it's going to do in the future within this year. But I think, like I said, if we're starting with what we've built, what you and I built, and taking that forward, you know, to build on these brand pillars. So what is achievable? Certainly it's coming back, it's production coming back. It's achievable for it to create impact, you know, because K&N Media's purpose, it's actually in our tagline, is that we are a production company that aims to be a catalyst for change by telling compelling stories disseminated across multimedia platforms. So we want to tell those stories. So, I mean, this platform is one way, but we are already in production for, you know, the music that will go with that. We're already talking to the artists. We're already, you know, interviewing the people that are going to be there. So because when you change one life, you're changing another, you know, it continues to spread. So I think it's achievable within the next 164 days that we come back, we reaffirm who we are, our positioning and our purpose in the things that we want to achieve for the people. And I suppose maybe by the people, because it's about them at the end of the day. Yeah.
This being an entrepreneurship podcast with a lot of business people that are following it, if you got access to funding, which is funding for projects like K&N Media and the stories that Gaise wants to tell, please reach out, please email her, find her on social media and email her. So when we finish this podcast, we like to do what we call Fast Five. It's where I ask you five questions that you can answer in one word or a sentence or a phrase. So it can be a phrase, don't worry. It doesn't really need to be one word. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, so question one. The accident left you with a lot of scars, both physically and emotionally. What do those scars represent today?
Survival.
And if Zuko were to watch this conversation on his 18th birthday, what would you want to say to him?
You're worthy. Yeah. You're worthy. You're a superhuman being. My boy, you are it. Like, nobody's like you. There's only like a few like you. Like, when we talk about autistic people, we talk about one in five or one, you know?
Yeah.
He's beautiful. Yeah. He's smart.
Yeah. And what does happiness represent today?
Peace. Peace. And it comes at a price sometimes, but I'm willing to pay all prices that I can be at peace. Peace.
And I know your mom has played such a big role in supporting you and the woman that you are today. What would you say to her right now?
Thank you, Mama. Thank you for showing me what it is to know your worth outside of what people attach to your worth. My mom has faced a lot of challenges in her life, and she just truly still believes that you can take everything away, and a lot has been taken away from her, but she still stands that I am me, and I deserve respect, I deserve acknowledgement, I deserve love, because she gives it so easily, and you know that she does. She's taught me that. And I think actually even part of, you know, me leaving when I went to Eastern Cape, I was like, now I'm not famous. Who am I? You know, now I don't have money. Who am I? Like all these things that we attach to ourselves. When you have none of those, do you think people should still respect you, still love you, still see you? And the answer is definitely yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely love your mom. Our moms actually share the same birthday. And your mom is one of the kindest people I've ever known or met, and one woman who rides for her children.
It's my mom.
She'll ride for you and Zuko. I absolutely love her. And finally, if you were able to know that Farai can hear you right now, what would you say to him? If he could hear you right now.
Actually, I think I just want him to say one thing.
Yeah.
He used to have a way of just saying, is it? You tell him something, he goes, is it? Yeah. You know, so can you just say, is it? Like, am I doing good? I don't know. Is it? That's literally what I want to hear from him. But I know he's good. You know, I know it in my spirit because it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt. I've been told, you know, many times that he took that decision because he wanted me to live for our child. And I think that's the ultimate sacrifice. You know, the love of God is the only thing that separates you from your loved one. So if he could do that for us, I mean, we are blessed, you know, and he wants us to know that, you know, we're here for a reason and a time. Imagine if I had died with him and left Zuko in a world that doesn't understand him. That's why I'm here. That is why I'm here. And I'll continue to live in the truth and the, you know, I suppose, gratitude of that.
Yeah. And that's it for our conversation with Kaise Nqula. If you're going through anything in your life right now, I hope the story that she shared helps you stand up because you've got the fight in you. If you need time to isolate, to go find yourself, do that. If you need to heal, do that. If you need to re-strategize and figure out your next step, do just that. I want to take this opportunity to thank Photographers Galore, our amazing studio partners right here in Sharon Lee in Randburg. If you're looking for a space to film your content, to take pictures, videos, or podcasting like this, they are the people to talk to. And if you're a corporate company looking for people to come and shoot pictures and videos at your events, you can also contact the Photographers Galore team. The details are on your screen right now. Until next time.